Welcome back to Silverlight TV. My name is John Papa. I'm the Silverlight Evangelist here at Microsoft. And today I've got a great guest with me, Nikhil, who's going to talk to us a little bit about RIA services. Nikhil, can you tell us a little about your role here at Microsoft?
Well, I've been at Microsoft for a very long time now, but currently working as an architect on Silverlight and RIA services for the past couple of years. It's been fun getting this product out and almost ready.
So you've been with RIA services, I understand, pretty much from the beginning of its inception when it had code names and whatnot.
Oh, yeah, we've got a couple code names. Alexandria is the last code name.
Excellent. And we have a new version of RIA services coming out sometime this year, which we'll be looking at some of the bits today to talk about the features that are coming out. Some of the stuff that you're going to be showing, I believe, is you can do in the version that came out last
There's
year.
Some stuff that came out with PDC. That was a fairly feature-complete release that you can do a bunch of things with. I will show a couple of new things that people will get their hands on with our next release, so pretty exciting stuff.
Great. So cutting edge right here. I want to also mention as well that Nikhil is going to be showing us validation as well as how to do server-side and client-side sharing of different kinds of code, and there's some new interfaces in RIA services that he'll be exploring as well today. So we've got some good stuff. We'll cut right into the demo.
Sure. Absolutely. Maybe take a minute just to talk about RIA services. I'm sure lots of people have already heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the key thing to keep in mind with RIA services, we're trying to build a prescriptive framework that would make building data-driven end-to-year applications simpler. The source of inspiration was a lot of work we'd done in ASP.NET around kind of building solutions and end-to-end building blocks. And I think if I were to distill the RIA services vision into a few bullet points, first and foremost is end-to-end data. That's bread and butter for most applications, and that's a good place to start. Another sort of principle that we had was simplify by building for the common case, building higher-level solutions. And then last but not least, but very important, was this idea that, hey, you're building an end-to-year rich internet application. You're going to have some logic on the server. You're going to have some logic on the client. These are really two halves of the same application. And the tooling and the infrastructure kind of leverage that concept to try and help you do things once and have the right things happen on the client and make it very easy to access what's on the server from the client. So, and I picked validation today. Obviously, RIA services is a very large topic. Validation in particular highlights a lot of those principles and key beliefs that we were trying to bring forth. So we can go switch over to demo.
I think what's great, and it was your point, just to add on to that a little bit, is when I've done a lot of applications over the years as a consultant, people don't generally appreciate a product such as RIA services until they've gone through that process of creating applications and realizing, oh, now I need to share validation on the client and the server, or I need to somehow transmit my objects from the server to the client, or more importantly in some cases, change tracking on the client. How do you implement these things, especially with large object graphs?
Absolutely. There's a lot of common plumbing. I mean, you write a first app, you write a second app, you write a third app. By the time you're done writing a few apps, you're noticing some patterns emerge. And they're really about getting the system up and running as opposed to your specific application.
Right.
And so with RIA services, we were hoping this is our first version. We want to take a stab at some of that infrastructure, some of that boilerplate plumbing code, so that you can go focus on your particular distinct sort of scenarios in your application.
Well, that's great.
So for my demo, I've picked what most folks on the RIA services team know, that my favorite scenario is a product catalog. It's a simple scenario. It's easy to kind of get some nice pictures to make the demo feel a little polished. So here's my running application. It's very simple. Shows a product list. I can click on a product, choose modify. It brings up a dialog. I can choose to edit this and commit the changes, which we'll go and see during the demo. In this particular demo, I'm going to show three things in the context of validation. Some simple basic validation using data annotations where your validation rules flow from the server to the client in a declarative way. Show a little bit of server-side validation where if you have some server-side logic, how validation errors get propagated all the way back to the client. And last but not least, so this is something lots of people have been asking, and it's a new capability we've got with the bits, doing async validation from the client, where you make an async call back to the server, get back a validation result, and show it while you're editing the form.
And so, that's useful because you might want to have some kind of a database check or whatnot to call and find out, is this rule going to be violated or not?
Exactly. So this is the basic application. Let's step back and look at the code a little bit. Here's my model. It's already all prepared. I've got my products, categories, and vendors with a few relationships between them.
Now, this is an entity framework model. You could also use resources with an Hibernate or any kind of custom model,
absolutely.
Right?
You can use a variety of data access technologies. It's really your choice, whatever your project requires or whatever you're comfortable with. For this particular demo, I'm using Entity Framework. So I've got my model ready, and I've written my domain service, which is where I write my application logic in the form of sort of CRUD methods. It's a link to Entity's domain service because I'm using Entity Framework. And I've got a few methods like get products, where I can do a little bit of application logic or filtering. So I've removed all the discontinued products from going back to the client. And I can write insert, update, delete methods if I wanted to. So it's a very simple service. Let me show what I have.
So just breaking in for a moment, the iQueryables are going to be used for anything that you're returning values for. Now, why is it iQueryable versus iEnumerable or list?
It can be, the power of iQueryable is we're expressing the intent that this is a set of objects that can be queried over. And so a client can either request all of the products in this case, or it can go say, hey, I'd like the list of products, but go ahead and tack on this additional query. And that allows you to optimize what you're retrieving, potentially all the way from the database, but certainly from the middle tier back to the client. And so it helps the client shape the sort of data that's coming back.
So a good scenario for that would be, I'm a developer in an IT shop. I've already got my code written. I want to further filter down my data set. Instead of writing a new method on the client, I could filter it further, say only ones that begin with S.
Yeah.
And that would actually happen on the server.
Right, exactly. And and to support that, I don't need to write every combinatorial permutation of get products, one that takes a filter, one that takes a sort, one that takes an ordering.
And that does happen
every
in the real world. So.
So you can see that we're leveraging the power of link throughout the stack.
That's great.
So at this point, let me run this. And let me edit a particular product and just show you what's happening. So if I choose to modify this and just type in some gibberish here, you'll notice that I got a validation error saying, hey, the maximum length is 10. Now, I didn't actually specify this rule anywhere. If we were to go look at the code, the generated code that gets added to your project.
Now, is this code in the client side?
On the client, absolutely. This was generated by looking at your domain service and your models on the server. And if I go to the model property, you'll notice it has a string length 10. I didn't specify that anywhere. It happens to be in my database. My schema says the maximum length of this field is 10 characters. And so that got incorporated into the Entity Framework model. We inspected that, looked at that on the server. We'll obviously enforce that on the server, mm-hmm. but we propagated it to the client so that you can get a better sort of end-user experience where you immediately get notified of this error. Now, I can go ahead and let's change this. And so this is still invalid.
And you could stylize these messages as
well. Absolutely. That's the power
of Silverlight.
It's all Silverlight. The error message changed. It says the model number must be made of 10 uppercase letters and digits. Now, you'll notice I added some custom validation rules. So if I go to my product class, you'll notice I added a regular expression rule. That's it has to be a certain format.
Now, when you add a rule, I noticed you went over to the server side. You should probably add the rule on the server side, I'm assuming, so then it gets caught on both places?
Well, yes. So clearly you want to enforce validity at every tier. Mm-hmm. And so on the server, you don't want to allow any bad data to come in. But you'd like to push the intent all the way down to the client where you can use it immediately and give immediate feedback.
So if you wanted to only put a rule on the client side, would you use a partial class on the client side, or would you edit that generated file?
I would not edit the generated file. I'd go implement in my, I can go handle like on model changing or on model changed methods that I can go write and write that code.
Great.
But here you can see I've essentially added additional semantics above and beyond what came from the model, like this regular expression. So this is simple. These are a bunch of attributes that we have in data annotations that are both on the server and on the client, and it allows me to declaratively specify a certain set of rules that I'd like to enforce.
So all the common ones that hit the 80% rule.
Yeah, so we've got required regular expression, string length, But what's very interesting is we've got something called custom validation, which is a lot of times you, in fact, can't express something declaratively, and so you can go ahead and write a method, and attach it over here using this attribute, custom validation, type of common rules. Here's the name of the validation rule and a certain error message. And if I go over to my common rules, you'll notice it's a simple method, returns validation result. It takes the value that you want to validate, in this case the description, and some additional information should you need it.
So the type of matches the class for the common rules, and
exactly.
Then the description is interesting. It's the string name that was in that.
Yep.
Okay.
And my definition of interesting description is a demo definition. It just says, hey, you need to have at least 10 words. And if it's not, if you don't have 10 words, I'm going to return a validation result that says, hey, description must be a paragraph of text. Otherwise, go ahead and return success. And let me show that again. So here's where I attached it. Now you'll notice what I did was I wrote commonrules.cs. I actually put a shared as part of the name of the file. What this tells the Rio Services tooling is that this code is meant to be shared across client and server.
So this exists on the server, and it's going to then move it to the client somehow.
So if I were to go build this at this point, and when I build this, I'm going to go back to my client project now, and you'll see under generate code, this file exists right here as well. And so what we've done is essentially taken this and transferred it to the client where it will also run. And at this point, if I run this code...
Is it effectively a copy of a file?
Exactly. And so if I run this code and, you know, for example, get rid of this description, you'll notice I get an error saying description must be a paragraph of text. And so without any postbacks or without any service calls to the server, this validation rule is affecting the behavior of the client.
So now you could put any custom validation there that you wanted on the server. What if you wanted to do cross-property validation? Could you do that in this kind of a...
Yes, I'm actually going to show you cross-property validation on the server. And so that kind of helps me, that's a nice transition to the next demo, which is, let's say I have some validation rule that is server-only, and I'm going to write a server-only validation rule in this case, but I still want the errors to be sent back to the client. So let's go back to the server.
So this, what you just showed here would have been good if you want a cross-property validation that was on both the server and the client.
Exactly.
Now you're going to show us one that's a little different. It's just a...
It's server-only,
server.
And the reason it's server-only is so I can actually demo a certain feature. So I'm going to go ahead and enable another custom validation, and this time it's on the product class itself, so it's going to do cross-field validation, and here's the rule itself. So it's the same pattern, validation result. This time it takes a product because it's going to operate on the whole product, and the rule is basically saying if the product's on sale and the cost of the product is more than 100, something's not matching up.
Now, technically, this rule, the way you've written it, doesn't have to be server-only, but this could have hit a database, for example.
Yes.
Which is when then...
It could have hit a database. It might have had additional complex rules about when a product is on sale, what needs to be the
true. Look up other property values and other products.
And it helps me show a server-only validation in this particular case. So let's run this again.
And prior to using Rio Services or these techniques that you're showing here now, this is a very complicated thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, you have to essentially hand roll your own service and figure out how to send errors back and how to take those errors and push them back into the UI, those types of
there
things.
There wasn't anything automatic to do this.
Yeah, it could all be done. You just have to custom build it.
Right.
So let's go ahead and choose to edit this product, this insanely priced toaster. We'll put it on sale.
Must work for the government there.
And go ahead and hit OK. So you'll notice... this thing shows up yellow as a pending edit. This is a server-only rule, so nothing's happened on the client yet to indicate that it wasn't invalid. I'll go ahead and save, at which point we'll push all the changes that we made back to the server. And it goes back to the server, results come back, and now this is an error. And so basically we've got the server errors coming back into the client. And if I had UI here, if this was a smarter UI, this would actually show me the errors. If I go to the entity and say, enumerate the validation errors property, all the validation errors will be there.
Now, was that synchronous or asynchronous?
This was asynchronous.
Okay, so technically you could have pressed save, it saves, and then maybe 5 seconds later the message could have come back if it was slow.
Exactly. So that was server validation. Now, this is fine. This server validation occurred when I hit save, and I was processing all the changes on the server. Oftentimes, you have applications where the user's editing an entity in the UI, and you'd like to indicate that there might be something wrong with this entity when you choose to commit it, to kind of bring back earlier notification. And I call that asynchronous validation. It is going to asynchronously make a call to the server, do some server rule, and then come back and show that in the UI. So let's go to my client code now. So on the client, Rio Services generates a product class that matches what's the shape of the product class on the server. But it's a but I can go ahead and add some partial, I can go ahead and add a partial class product and add some logic to that. So in particular, what I'm going to go ahead and do, let me uncomment this code first and then talk about it. So whenever a property is changed, we have a pattern for on foo change. So if there's a foo property, there's going to be an on foo change, which I can go ahead and implement as a partial method. So I'm interested in handling whenever the on sale checkbox is checked. If I'm deserializing, don't do anything, because that's I don't care about that scenario. I only care about when the user is actually editing the entity. And what I'm going to go ahead and do is make a call to the server. So I'm newing up a catalog context, calling is out of stock, passing in the product ID, and a delegate for what to do with when the results come back. So let me switch over now to the server to first show the implementation. Go back to my service. So what I've written is a method. So as I mentioned, here's my domain service, catalog service, and it contains CRUD methods. Now, in addition to CRUD methods, it can also contain arbitrary other methods that I'd like to be able to call from the client that fall out of the CRUD pattern, but logically belong to this service because I want to encapsulate all the rules that belong to the service in this class.
Right.
So I've got a method called isOutOfStock, it returns a Boolean, and it takes a product ID. And here I can go ahead and talk to the database. I have full access to all of the data back on the server and all of the rules. And what I'm specifically checking is if the product has no inventory, then it can't be put on sale. And I'm looking at my inventory tables.
And these types of methods you have to decorate with the invoke attribute.
Exactly.
As opposed, right.
This tells it's not part of the CRUD pattern. So I've got my method here. While I'm here, and let me also show you the update method. The update method actually calls into this method as well. So if the client doesn't validate and it passes this value in, I'm actually going to use the same rule on the server to perform the same validation.
Okay.
And send the error back. But in this case, what we're interested in is trying to get this notification as early as possible to the user who might be trying to put a product on sale. So when this call comes back, so this asynchronous call, I am going to look at what the value of the property is and what is the value that the server sent back, this value here. And based on that, I'm either going to create a new validation error and add it to the validation errors collection, or if it's no longer invalid, I'm going to go ahead and remove the old validation error that I'd created. So you can see, essentially what I'm doing is making an asynchronous call whenever this property changes, taking the result that comes back from the server, and updating the validation errors collection.
And validation errors is a collection that comes with Rio Services?
Exactly. It's on the entity base class.
Okay. So that's the mechanism to transport back and forth these messages.
And now the interesting thing that's going on behind the scenes is validation errors is a simple OM for actually participating in the new Silverlight 4 feature called iNotifyDataErrorInfo. So the entity base class implements that in addition to a slew of other services like change tracking and change notification.
So that's a new interface.
iNotifyData Error Info. Great. We lovingly call it INDEI.
Yes. If you've got five letters in an acronym, you know it's a big acronym.
Exactly. and so the UI is able to respond to that to listen for validation errors that come asynchronously or happen behind the scenes outside of a property setter. So at any point in time, whenever this call comes back, I can go ahead and modify this collection, and that will reflect in the UI. So that's pretty cool.
Great.
So let's run this.
Let's see how this works.
And let's choose this. And I know that this particular object has zero inventory on the server, so I've conveniently chosen this. And you will notice that it didn't work. Let me refresh and rebuild.
So here we're going to check a item to be on sale that you have no inventory for. So
exactly.
You're expecting the error message to come
exactly.
back.
Exactly. There you go. And now, so I haven't committed the form. I haven't said okay. I haven't hit save, but I get back an error, and I'm associating the error with this particular property.
So this would be great for any kind of scenario where I'm typing in information on the form, or a user's typing it in,
yes.
and you want immediate feedback,
yes.
or as close to immediate as you can get before yeah. they have to press save.
And the classic scenario for this, of course, is a user registration form. You type in a, hey, I'd like this to be my ID, and whether this ID is available or not is something you want to tell the user before they hit OK and finish the whole form and then kind of have to come back to it.
So let's say you had 10 fields on your form like this, and you had 10 asynchronous validation operations going on. They fall fire off on their own.
Yes.
Meaning they're not going to be serialized in any kind of a way, I assume.
Right.
So they technically could come back in any particular order?
Yeah. I mean, it depends on how you write the code. If you really have 10 fields that you want to validate, I might choose to actually go create a structure that contains 10 fields and, you know, tries to validate all 10 at a time.
Now, where do you associate the error message with that particular field?
That's a good question.
Visually.
So back on the server, when I go to my catalog service, you'll see that here I'm just returning a bool, right? And the code on the client takes that, oops, on the client, and it builds up a validation result, and it says the name of the member that's associated with is the on sale.
Okay, and then whatever, so that's the property name, and then whatever property is associated on the screen with the data binding operation
exactly.
will get that
yes.
flag.
And I can have more than one property here too, like if there's an error that is associated with multiple fields. Or I can go ahead and add multiple errors at the same time if multiple errors come back.
If you wanted to, in multiple errors, we just add it to the collection. If for doing multiple fields having the same message, would you just use a common delimited list?
Yes. That's an array, so it's basically an array of fields.
Right. Great.
But you might I think from a best practices perspective, I think you want to think about the end user a little bit. Which field are they likely to associate the error with? And which field are they likely to correct to fix the error? And so you kind of want to think about the end user experience.
See, I was thinking about creating an application where just as soon as they fix one error, another one pops up in another field.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like whack-a-mole.
Yes, exactly. But, so you kind of you have to kind of imagine what are the flow that the user is going to take.
Yeah.
And so this wraps up sort of a quick look at validation. Hopefully, this is an exciting new feature that people will see coming down the pipe. And so we talked about simple validation using declarative data annotation rules. We talked about extending that with simple methods that you can go write some custom rules. We talked about writing some server-only validations. And then we finally talked about doing validation on the client asynchronously, talking to back to the server.
And I think this covers a lot of the common scenarios that businesses are hitting today. A lot of the consulting jobs that I've had in the past, prior to my life at Microsoft, one of the biggest issues that came up was how do we handle our own custom business rules? One thing we didn't talk about here, which we'll get into in a future episode, is how do we handle generated rules on the fly, meaning they're mm-hmm. stored in XML or a database mm-hmm. or somewhere mm-hmm. else. And I believe there is a way to do that
Absolutely.
For resources as well.
Absolutely.
Great.
Yes,
so
it's a whole topic in itself.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Nikhil, for coming on today. And thank everybody for watching Silverlight TV. If you haven't already, please check us out on Facebook or on Twitter. You can follow us at Silverlight TV.
I would like to add one more thing. I've got a mixed talk coming up in just about a month. Where we talk about RIA services and showing you how to use RIA services both quickly and effectively.
You do. Yes, you do. I'm glad you mentioned that. And at Mix, I believe yours is the only RIA services talk. Is that right?
Cool. That's
Excellent.
Great.
Great. So you've got to check out Nikhil at Mix. Okay.